Hello, and welcome to the Conscious Hoofbeat Podcast. This is a podcast that explores the interconnectedness of our health and the health of our horses through self-care, mindfulness, and personal development, along with a little equine wisdom and wellness. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Maynard, the passion-driven equinologist. I have dedicated my life to the horse. Some call me a fanatic, and I claim it, because I'd rather be dead than horseless. I'm a published author and researcher, equine body worker, energy facilitator, and I am passionate about deepening the human-horse experience. Join me here every Monday where I share my spiritual journey with horses, woo-woo horse care practices, and shared lived experiences from horsewomen around the world. Welcome back, Erin Schroeder. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's such a cold day here in Wyoming. It's good to sit inside and connect with you.
It is. We always joke that we only get to record podcasts together when it's shitty weather outside. So we're taking advantage of it. And for those who don't know Erin. Erin is a big part of my life. We go way back and have known each other for, I hate to say how many years because it makes us sound old, but in the podcast with equine rehabilitation specialist Heather Hawley, Heather talked about how important your horse's team is, and we also talked about how important having a support system is, and Erin is a huge part of my support system in my life with horses. And we have conversations on a regular basis. And something that's been showing up for us a lot lately that we want to talk about today is something I call the lazy factor, but that has a negative connotation. So I don't like to say that too much, but it really is around this question about, what does it take for horse people to want to do the work? So Erin and I have different businesses, but it still shows up in all these different aspects. So what does that mean for you, Erin, when we ask this question? What does it take for horse people to show up and do the work?
Well, I think for me, it's having people want either their riding to progress or their horse's training to progress, but then they will not ride or work with their horse on a consistent basis. You know, I might give a lesson and I'm like, well, you know, how many times have you ridden since our last lesson? Well, they haven't ridden at all since the last lesson, or they're only riding their horse once a week. And if you're only riding your horse once a week, your horse really isn't going to progress. You're really not going to progress. You have to put in a lot more work and a lot more time than that.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter if it's riding, training, or, you know, even our own personal work. You know, you and I have talked about the four square model of horsemanship before, and how, you know, there's the rider's mind, the horse's mind, the rider's body, the horse's body. So we have to put in the work. Like, are we physically fit enough, you know, to ride in a 60-minute lesson? I know you've shared that some of your riders they're not in physical enough, good enough shape that they can even get through an entire lesson. So it's not just in the saddle or the training of the horse. There's a lot of aspects to it. And something that's been showing up lately that you've been sharing with me that I wanted to talk about, just to bring more awareness for the listeners, is a recent horse that you have in training. And you get a lot of these horses in, and she's 7 years old. Hasn't really been started under saddle. And can you just talk a little bit about this horse and what's been showing up for you and how you've had to address this with the owner?
Yes. She has I think they've sat on her, but she's not really broke. They have not, they shouldn't have been trying to sit on her or do different things. Cause I know that they've fallen off of her cause she's kind of spooked out from underneath of them. She's not comfortable with things above her. One of the biggest problems why she came is you couldn't catch her. Mm-hmm. And I think so it got to be a habit. She wasn't worked with a whole lot. You would go to catch her, then she would be bad to be caught. Then people got frustrated and then they would chase her around and then that became a habit. And so it was just this cycle of, all of these things. Well, then I think that makes it harder because if you know that every time you try to go work with this horse, it's going to be a frustrating thing because you can't catch her. And then by the time you've chased her around and everything else, and you do get her caught, you're irritated, she's upset, and so everything escalates, then it really makes it harder for you to want to show up and do the work when that's how it's going to go. So I think in a lot of instances, they didn't know how to break that cycle. Mm-hmm. There's so much out there that says, make them, if they want to run away from you, make them run until they don't want to run anymore. And okay, that might work if you had 6 hours to stay out there but most people don't. Mm-hmm. And so then it just becomes a habit. So yeah, it's not fun for the horse. It's not fun for the human. The human doesn't have time to go spend all that time trying to catch him. By the time they do get him caught, they don't have time to do anything else with them. And yeah, just a cycle.
Yeah, it's a cycle. And so they send you these horses, and I hate to call them trouble horses or problem horses, but what would be a better word? Maybe with little quirks or something kind of, but they were man-made quirks, right?
Well, I think maybe they're a bit man-made, but I think the horse is, there's initially that particular mare is just more prone to not wanting to be caught. The owner doesn't really know what happened as far as like she's always had that problem. And then, but rather than get better, it's kind of just gotten worse. She thinks maybe the breeder that she got her from, they didn't catch her very often, or they roped her to catch her, or, who knows. But I think a lot of these horses that you see, what the problem is that they are prone to be a little bit more difficult horse. They're prone to be that horse that has a couple quirks that maybe is going to take a little extra time. And then they get with people that don't have that time or that don't read the horse well enough to understand what they need to do with them. And so then the problems just get worse. And to all, then they end up being that quote unquote problem horse.
Right. And to me, what I hear is they didn't get enough handling, didn't get the good foundational work. And then here we are, now they're 7 and we're just now addressing it. So You started to talk about it a little bit about there's layers to this, though. It's not just the horse is a trouble horse, period, or the owner didn't do the work. I mean, there's layers around it. And so do you want to talk a little bit about, why hasn't the proper foundational work and everything been done and the layers to that?
Well, yeah, I think, they got the horse. People have jobs, people work full-time. We live in Wyoming. So you work full-time, you come home, you have kids. So you have responsibilities at home. And then the wind's blowing 50 miles an hour, the wind chill's below zero. So you're like, well, not this day. Or you try to go out there and you try to catch her, but it's so miserable out, then you're not willing to spend a lot of time out there at it because you're freezing or it gets dark. You know it's going to take you 45 minutes to catch her, and well, it's going to get dark before I can even get her caught, so never mind. So then it ends up being, well, I'll just work with her every weekend. And then it ends up being, well, it's snowing and horrible outside this weekend. And so then it ends up being maybe one weekend a month, if you're lucky during the winter here, that might be decent enough to go outside. So it, and then, so then the horse doesn't progress or gets, you know, back, slides backwards. So then you want to go out there even less, like it's less rewarding to go out there. Then there's the matter of not knowing what to do when you do get out there. Well, okay, so maybe you made the time, but you don't know what to do. What you're doing isn't working, but you really don't know what else to do because the information you've seen has only showed you like to face up, move their feet until they don't want to move their feet anymore. So that's what you know. Well, that hasn't worked. So now what? Now, like, you're lost and you don't know what to do. So there can just be so many different things that compound on top of each other of like why people won't go work with their horse. Now, I think there's also layers to that. Like, you can seek out more information, you know, to know other approaches that you might be able to try. You can be as crazy as I am and go out there anyway, even though it's awful. there are some points where people just, it's not important enough to them for them to make the time. Like, it's lower down on their priority list, so they don't make the time. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. What I'm saying is, like, a horse, like this particular horse, is not the horse that they should have. Like, maybe they need a different one that, yeah, even if you don't touch them for 3 weeks, you go out there and they're in the same place you left off, you know, which would be like, I have a 2-year-old like that. You could probably let him sit out there for, well, he's 3 now, he's not 2, but he's always been that way. You can let him hang out and he's fine and it's not a problem. Like, he's one of those easy horses that could be a weekend warrior horse.
Yeah, but he's also been handled consistently so since he was born. I feel like that makes a difference. Some horses, you know, don't need as much handling, and some do, but I still feel that the foundational work is important. And maybe you can only do it 3 times a week, but 3 times a week for 10-15 minutes a time is still better than them sitting for 3 weeks or even twice a week. Like, I really believe that. So I feel like where there's a will, there's a way, you know, like, even though it might be 30 below zero in the winter, I still have to go out. I have to catch the horse and put a halter on and lead him into the barn. Like, it's just basic handling. And I know there's layers, but like you said, it's not on the priority list. So I'm like, I guess, so what's the answer? You know, what is the answer for a horse like this? Well, they put them in training with you, right?
Well, that, or they either, and I mean, it's just the amount of time that it would really take to get this horse real consistent. Most people aren't going to spend that much money because it's expensive to have them in training, because it just is. It's my time. I have overhead. I guess you do need to prioritize, like, okay, I really want to keep this horse. So you have to make yourself get out there and do it. Like, one thing I can say, so on the other end of the spectrum, I know a gal here, she decided she wanted to show her horse at like the amateur world show or something, one of the big AQHA events. Mm-hmm. She works full time. She doesn't get home from work until after dark. She doesn't even have an outdoor arena. Like, she does not have the facilities. This woman was out there in the winter in her insulated coveralls with her truck headlights turned on, riding that mare because she wanted to go to that show. She didn't have a trainer. She didn't have, and she did go. And she was like top 10 in the amateur hunter under saddle or whatever. But she, so that is perseverance. Like, yeah, no arena, riding your horse in the headlights of your truck running in the middle of the Wyoming winter. Like, so there's that side of it too. So yes, a little bit is how bad do you want to be out there doing it? If you really want to do it, you're going to figure out a way.
Yeah. And what I also hear is it's good to have goals. Like, I know for me, like, I don't really show much anymore, but for me, like, even signing up for a clinic or having a consistent lesson program gives me a goal. It's like, okay, I got a lesson on Saturday, so I need to, you know, ride at least a couple times, because what's the point of paying the money for the lesson if I'm not going to practice? Right. And then the signing up for the clinic gives me the incentive to go to the lessons and keep practicing. And it kind of, talking about those layers, it builds on itself, but you have to want it bad enough. Like, and this is what I, you know, what I talk about in the Riding After 40 project and what Conscious Hoofbeat is kind of about, like us lifestyle horsewomen. Like, there's just something in us that we just, we want it bad enough, and I don't know how you label that. Do you? Aside from horse crazy?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Yeah. It is a lifestyle. And then, yeah, there's different sides to that too. Like, my husband and I also realized that we're not as motivated anymore to get out and do things when the weather's terrible. Like, it's really hard to have the consistency that we want to have. And so we're looking at uprooting our entire existence and moving somewhere where the weather's better so we can do more with our horses, because right, that's important to us. So not that everyone can always do that, but yeah.
Right. But what I hear you say is when you prioritize something, you know, like I said, to where there's a will, there's a way, you make it happen. You just do. For me, that means maybe I don't go out Friday night. I stay home and work my horse because the wind doesn't go down till, you know, 8 o'clock. Like, there's just things that I compromise so that I can make my horses a priority. And it, like you said before, this isn't about, we're not here to make anybody right or wrong. It's about bringing awareness. So this particular horse that you were talking about that's currently in training with you, it's like, you know, maybe she's just not the best match for her owner. It's about finding the right mount for you, right? And that's a big part of it. And I think it's about, like you said, finding some goals, finding some things that, you know, landmarks in your career with horses that you want to accomplish. Like, that woman wanted to show at that show. Like, I know, I've known other people, my background's more in the Arabian industry. And it's like, for some people, their goal is like, I want to show at the Scottsdale Arabian Show, the largest Arabian show in the world. And it's only a class A show, right? It's not like getting a national championship or a regional championship. It's just a big deal. And just, they want to have that experience, and they might only ever do it once in their life, but it's a goal for them and something to look forward to. And it doesn't always have to be something huge, but I feel like it needs to be something. Like, we have to have a purpose with our horses. And I suppose if your purpose is that you just want to have pets and have them in your backyard and enjoy their beauty, right? And feed them treats and you enjoy caring for them, that's okay too. But be clear on what you want, what you're capable of, what your time restraints are, so that you get the right horse for you.
Yes. Yes, very much so. If you want to feed them treats, and then don't expect to saddle up and go on a big trail ride with your friends if you haven't bought a really finished season horse that you know can sit, or if you aren't willing to go out and ride on a regular basis. Yeah.
Just yeah. So having realistic expectations also around these goals.
Yes.
So what can we do to help support people and their horses?
So, like, for myself, where I do take some training horses and I give lessons and things like that, I have gotten to where I feel like I want to be less of a people pleaser as far as a professional. It is your job to be honest with people, and not honest in a way that you make them feel bad, but honest in a way that you help them understand what realistic goals are for them. Help them understand that, hey, maybe this isn't, you know, the right horse. And it's kind of, you know, I explained to this particular owner today of, you know, this horse is going to always be a project. Like, she's never going to be the simple, easy horse. Like, she's always going to take more time than some. And so evaluate if you have that time or that money. So if it's going to be herself working on that horse, do you have that time? If you want to leave it in training with me, do you have that money? Do you want to spend that much money on that particular horse?
Yeah. And is the horse worth the investment?
Well, I mean, they're all worth an investment. It's just like, how do you say they're not? Like, it's just, yeah. Do you want to spend that much money for that? So,
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that horse worth the investment for that each individual? Because, you know, if that's not the right horse for that person, they can spend, you know, a year's worth of training is like, can be over 12 grand. You can take that 12 grand and go get yourself a nice little push button horse, maybe, right? Like,
well, not anymore.
Well,
anymore. You want a push button, you better have 30.
You're going to get more for 12 grand than you will for 2,500. Put it that way.
Oh, yes.
You're going to get more training on that. So you have to, there's just different things to look at and think about.
Yes. And so I think, like, for myself, it's, you know, kind of helping people decipher those lines and then helping people. I think some people feel guilty to sell their horse. They feel like they're giving up on them, or, you know, that they've failed, and it doesn't, that's not true. Sometimes the decision to sell a horse is just a better decision for that particular horse or that particular owner. So I don't think that, you know, just to encourage people that, hey, you don't need to look at this like you failed this mare. She's like, she has potential. She's a pretty mover. She's nice put together. But she needs someone that can spend a lot of time with her. So, you know, if you had a teenager that's pretty handy or something like that, that has more time than a full-time working mother, then maybe that would be the better fit for a horse like that. And I guess there, because there's horses that I've had to sell that I didn't really want to, but maybe I wasn't meshing with them. And then when you do see them go on and have happy, successful lives, and you know you did the right thing, then it makes it a little bit easier. But I think you know, just helping people know that that's okay. It's okay if you need to sell them. It's okay if you need to reevaluate where you are. It's okay to pay someone to help you with them. It's, you know, so
it's okay if you don't ride. You know, I always feel like as long as they're being cared for, like I know for me, as I've gotten older and when the weather's crappy, I don't want to go out and ride in the wind and all my layers, but I've gotten into doing more different types of groundwork and liberty and still finding different ways to enjoy the horses. Just, it's not right or wrong. It's just maybe different.
Yes. But like, don't have this expectation that you're going to go hit the trail in the summer with your friends. If, you know, you're like, well, I don't like to ride during the winter, so the horse isn't getting the work. Like, yes, it's okay not to ride, but then adjust your expectations too, so they're realistic. So help, really for me to help people kind of decipher all that. To me, that's how I can help people, is just raising that understanding and awareness, and then two, just helping them know that, yeah, it is okay to, you know, find different homes or go down a different pathway based on your goals. And, or it is okay to say, well, my focus isn't going to be riding, because maybe you do want to keep that horse, but you understand that you're not able to progress the training as quickly as you'd like because you can't put the time in. So yeah, just helping people get through all those little hurdles.
Yeah, because we all need a support system. And I also feel we need tools in our toolbox, because what might work for one horse might not work for the next horse, and vice versa.
Well, and that's where people really do need to spend that time, so they learn how to read their horses, or do have a professional that maybe is a little bit better at reading them, evaluate the horse and say, hey, you know, this is what this one's going to need. Decide if you want to, you know, put that much time and money into them. So, and just like with you, do a lot of helping people, you know, get the horse healthy, you know, as far as their nutrition and with the body work, and, you know, those types of things can really benefit that horse too. If their nutrition's not good, then, and so people need to be willing to put in the effort on that too, like right, keeping their feet done properly, making sure that their diet is adequate, making sure that, okay, yeah, they're working on them and training on them, but if they are sore in their body, then your training's not going to go well. Your yeah. riding's not going to go well. So yeah, all the time, like you say, it's that four-legged stool. So there needs to be all those components.
Right. And we come from, I believe, a culture and a society where we're so used to like, give them a pill, give them a shot, do a one-time fix. And we want that instant gratification. And, you know, health doesn't happen overnight. And when I say health, I'm talking spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And so when you're training these horses you get in, you're not just like training that. There's the emotional aspect of it, right? Like that you're having to deal with. And wiggy horses are usually nutritionally imbalanced, and people don't understand that. And it's just, it's all about balance, and it all trickles down. It's like that leg bone's connected to the knee bone. If the feet are too long or not balanced, you know, all the ting points are in the cornet band. So that affects all the meridians in the horse, and that that creates another imbalance. And, you know, it just trickles down. It's about those layers again. And again, not happening overnight. It takes, you know, 60 days to get a supplement in the system. It takes 120 for the blood to completely turn, and it takes a whole year for the cells to regenerate. And when you get these horses in, they're not 30-day wonders. They're horses that will require months and sometimes, you know, even a year or two, right, to really get balanced and get their emotions regulated. That's the whole package
deal. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And that's something that's really hard, because that's some of your people that are more into showing will tend to leave horses in training for long periods of time. Like, their horses usually live at the trainer, mm-hmm. but your average horse owner doesn't want to invest that financially into their horse. And so that's where, yeah, you're supposed to work the 60-day wonder, you know, and it takes so much longer than that to even crack the shell on some of these horses. So,
right. So if we wanted to sum this up, how would you sum this up and share some last minute equine wisdom for the listeners?
Oh gosh, I'm bad at that. So to sum it up, I guess would be to look at all aspects of your horse's life, like their physical health, their mental health, and then your physical health, your mental health, like how much time are you willing to devote? So it kind of comes back even a little to that four square module, rider's mind, rider's body, horse's mind, horse's body. You have mm-hmm. to take all those things into consideration. And like you said, the support system, find someone that you trust. If you're struggling or you need motivation, you know, find an instructor that's really motivating and can help you meet those goals, or find a trainer that's maybe willing to work with your horse part-time training. Like, if you can only work with your horse 3 days a week, maybe you can find a trainer that will do partial training, so the horse gets the consistency that they need. There's a lot of different things that you can do, but think outside of the box. Like, do some research, see what's available to you. Don't just get lazy.
Right. Exactly. And that's what Erin and I are here for. So if you're seeking support, we'd be more than happy to help you. I'll leave links in the show notes. And I know we can keep talking, but we'll save it for another podcast, and because we're always coming up with stuff that just shows up in our lives with horses. So thank you, Erin. Thank you for all that you do for the horses that come to your barn and for their owners. And thank you for joining me.
You bet. I always enjoy it.
Yes, because we just love talking about horses. We don't care if anybody's listening, but we thought this would be a fun one to just share some awareness around. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time, embrace your inner horse crazy, and more importantly, enjoy your horse.